now helping us in moderating this final panel, because the final panel is more there for the outlook into the future. Yeah? What do we learn now from all these things yesterday, from the academic research papers today, from application cases in large organizations, in businesses, public administrations? What do we learn? And how could we really take, follow the advice by Horst Foster, the director of the responsible director from the European Commission yesterday, who said the doors are wide open. Yeah, you just have to go through that. Yeah, so the European Commission is ready to accept plans for new action, but don't come without plans. So the person who we were able to get now to do this comes from a completely different world, from the world of analysts, yeah? And he's actually coming from the Ovum company, Ovum. It's Mike Davis, who has worked in for other areas very successfully in helping both the academics and the commission use his expertise as analysts to see how supply in the end of academics can meet demand. Thank you.
Excellent. I'll clap one of those. Thank you. Right. Clear enough? Use both. Oh, right. Even better. Okay. Mike Davis from Ovum. Incredibly intimidated to be in this room here with all of you talking about machine translation, which is a technology I know now is almost as old as I am, which is really scary. Martin yesterday said that the word moderator wasn't right, and actually I think it isn't right either. I've looked through the thesaurus, and I think host is probably the best role that I can perform at this moment. I'm fortunate to have the three people who are going to speak through this panel and make their presentations. Yes, thank you, Hans. It was three at one point this morning, wasn't it? Yes, thank you. Whenever I hear the phrase long distance reordering, I'm always reminded of the English humorist Alan Corran, who said that when he joined the British Army, he was given a gun and told to walk towards anybody who put a verb at the end of a sentence. Horribly xenophobic and know where we are, but actually quite telling in terms of what are the issues within translation as a whole and machine translation in particular. Okay, so very grateful to have the four panelists here. I'm going to let them say their bits first. We are talking about business needs here. We're talking about, this is moving away from, the last presentation summed it up absolutely perfectly, moving into, you know, how do we make this stuff really business relevant. The EU would not be funding Euromatrix Plus if it didn't see that we need it. We need good translation to make the European Union work and be competitive. So, would you like to come first and do yours?
Okay. So the question is, will there be winners? My name is Gregor Thurmer. I come from LinguaTech, which is a small company doing language technology based in Munich. And we also have machine translation products. I want to give the baseline first, and there was the workshop on machine translation in Athens a couple of weeks ago. And the outcome is two sentences. One is, knowledge-driven systems are still not beaten in quality by data-driven systems in the majority of language directions research. This we heard yesterday. And I would like to make a comment in such a way that there has been significant investment in SMT systems the last 10 years, and I think the investment in this type of machine translation is much higher than it ever was for rule-based systems. And still, you would not be able to reach superior quality. That's the first statement. The second statement is MT output acceptability is between 50% and 20%, depending on the language direction. So basically, winners look different. I mean, what you translate is definitely not sufficient for human use. And we have heard of error analysis. Basically, the knowledge-driven systems have parse failures and lack robustness issues. they lack lexical selection and they lack fluency, whereas the data-driven systems have trouble with non-local phenomena or word order, grammaticality of output, accuracy, domain dependency, and that. So all this is known, and I think from a point of view of a general, you start, you have your troops, you come from one age, you have your troops, and you see a couple of other troops over there. And what you should do is combine them and really fight the enemy together. I think there is a lot of room for improvement in terms of machine translation quality. And what I would propose is to build hybrid MT systems with exploit all available knowledge sources. I mean, I can start systems from scratch, ignoring that there are dictionaries with hundreds of thousands of entries, and there are everything grammars, and there are phrase tables and language models. And in building a system, you should use all the resources you have, because the systems are lousy enough, and they really can, you can try to get better by using whatever you can grab. And you should build flexible system architectures, which first of all support all types of resources, scale the systems according to their availability. I mean, if you don't have bilingual corpora, you still have to translate. So you must be able to do something about that. And there have been types of architectures already been proposed. First of all, coupling systems like statistical post-editing is have a rule-based system first and then a statistical afterwards. You can do it serially or parallel. You can extend the different approaches by respective other components. For example, you make a lovely rule-based preprocessor in front of a statistical decoder, and you can really combine in a hybrid way different components, as we heard this morning from Jaime. I think this is something we should look into. Now, coming from a rule-based corner, as everybody knows, I would not be as brave as to claim that everybody should follow my way of doing it and call the field accordingly. I just give you some things how I would see a possible improvement, and this is how I would do it. First of all, you have to worry about the source content. You must have a clear idea of what you want to translate. You can't start generating a target sentence without knowing what the source was. This simply doesn't work. The source language is not just a bag of words, which you can cover using word semantics. It has a structure, and the structure needs to be interpreted, and you can only generate what you have analyzed before. So analysis is the key. And I think this is a knowledge-driven task, and there have been a lot of things like syntactic functions, intonation, tense and aspect pronouns, gapping, and all those phenomena, which everybody knows, need to be analyzed properly in order to be generated properly. And this must be supported by data-driven resources. They are available now. They have not been previously. You should go beyond sentence boundary. We have examples of named entity, coreference, text grammars, and so on, that those phenomena influence the analysis quality. It's a kind of strange assumption that a translator would be given one sentence and asked to translate this sentence without knowing the context. Nobody works that way. Just our systems do. And this is a drawback. And finally, from a point of view of rule-based systems, if you have a sentence and you find a parse for it, and you do the lexical selection right, the output is just perfect. It's grammatical, it's fluent, it's accurate, fine. And I guess that's something you should base your development on and not kind of question that again. So the only case is here, if you don't find a parse, you get rubbish. And this is something you have to worry about. That's the last point. In transfer, I mean, what you need to do there is maintain translation accuracy. Missing words, and sometimes you get a better score if you simply ignore words in the input. I mean, this goes on the cost of accuracy. On the other hand, you generate words which were not in the input. So even if your output is fluent, it's not what has been said in the beginning. And if you use all the knowledge sources, then I think, if you look at dictionaries, bilingual dictionaries, all possible translations, you can imagine are part of those dictionaries. I mean, they have hundreds of thousands of terms, and dictionaries in our system have close to 1 million translations. So basically, you should use that, and whatever you are able to generate using phrase table technology is a subset of those. And I think you should use this resource, first of all, to clean up the phrase tables. Second, to add information which has not been found by the phrase table generation process. On the other hand, the rule-based systems should use the probabilities which can be achieved from the phrase table selections, because their technique of lexical selection is very weak. You know, it relies on syntactic tests, basically, which fail in a significant amount of times, and this should be done. On the other hand, as far as structure is concerned, there is structural transfer, and there's a bunch of literature on structural transfer, and we know that source and target trees are not isomorphic, except if you go to the deep dependencies, as we have heard from Jan yesterday. So having kind of synchronous trees, you know, right from the beginning that this is not the best thing to go. On the other hand, don't decide on transfer selection with limited knowledge and give generation a kind of lattice of translation options and not just one thing which prematurely you have decided to use. And again, this morning in Jaime's talk, it has shown up what you call flooding. You simply give a lot of alternatives and have the later components decide on how to use it. Generation, I would think that improving fluency and grammaticality of translation results is the core. You should build a knowledge-driven skeleton of the target text, because constituent ordering based on syntactic functions or cases, do insertion, complex VP split, and so on, this is all things which can be mastered by using technology which we already have. And you must ensure that the output is grammatical. This is the first and fundamental criterion. If you go to a translator and say, this is my output, and they say, it's not even grammatical. Unfortunately, this is no concept in evaluation whatsoever. I think that's a mistake. Also, on top of that, I would use information which is encoded in language models and things like those for fine-tuning, for selecting proper lexical units, for handling language use kind of dependent phenomena like adverb placement, preposition selection, and all that. So this is how I would think you could make progress in translation quality. As far as the content is concerned, we must keep in mind that NT is not a playground for machine learning or computational linguistic approaches. And I have sometimes the impression that this statement is kind of neglected. We have to worry about the real user problems in translation, and most of the papers which are published now do not do that. Like deficient input, you know, spelling errors and what to have, customer-specific terminology, translation memory integration, domain adaptation, embedding of MT into larger solutions. I mean, this is where the battle is won or lost. Right? It's not, I mean, this is one of the options. But that's definitely something to worry about. And coming back to the original question, winners, I think, will be the systems with user or market acceptance. And this is on two pillars. One is machine translation quality, by integrating all available resources in whichever way. And the second is improved domain integration, user adaptation, and all that, and try to be application-oriented. I think systems who follow those two points may have a little better chance to survive than currently. Okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you for that. So, heard your bit from Vendor, but very, very impressed you put in the real issues, because that's what the session's about, making sure that we reflect the real business needs that are going on. I'd like now to ask Monica, sorry, forget my names, to, she said this is a reprise of Berlin. I think it's actually slightly more than that. As a real end user, real business case, actually delivering real benefits. Hopefully we're going to put the not just the actual need, but also develop the strategy and what's behind why machine translation is going to be necessary. One of the other things that has struck me listening to you all over the last couple of days and speaking with you is Monica's about to talk about giving the end users, citizens, access to translation, and a couple of things, citizens having access to translations. what strikes me is there may be a limitation in the future in the fact that not all citizens are structured. We're talking mainly about documentation here. Documentation is structured by definition. And colloquialisms, dialects, etc., are going to be very important in empowering the citizen to use machine translation in the future. My little example, I live near Hull in the north of England, and when the people there say the meeting will last from 10 till 4, they don't say it will last from 10 till 4, they say 10 while 4. How many systems would actually pick that up and do it correctly? Just a thought. Monica.
I'm not going to enter in this point. And I am not an expert in machine translation, so I am going to speak to you as a customer, as a provider of this service to the civil servants in the Catalan administration and also to the citizens of Catalonia. As you know, Catalonia is a region of Spain where there are now three official languages, Catalan, Spanish, and Occitan. Occitan is only spoken in a small part in the north of Catalonia. And the administration has to work in these three languages. So since in 2003, we began to think about installing a machine translation service in some departments where the use of this Catalan and Spanish, because Occitan is very small used, where these two languages has to be used. As you know, Catalan is not an official language of the European Community, so it has not been able to participate in any of the development programs related with computational linguistic or machine translation or any other. So we have to work with companies with wanted to develop these tools, and with some university departments which were working also in this area. So I will present very quickly the service we are offering and also the figures so that you can see the volume that we are working with. I will speak very quickly about the objectives, the characteristics, the functions. I will show you some examples, and I will give you some figures and data of the service we are offering. I work in the Secretariat of Linguistic Policy, so one of our objectives is to organize the use of the languages in our region. So we developed different tools to facilitate the use of all these the languages used in Catalonia. The official use is always in Catalan and Spanish, but there are a lot of people living there, as in everywhere in Europe, that they have many other first languages, and we have to provide services in different languages, at least information. But in the health service, they have to work using different languages. In the education department also. So we have been developing different tools to help the professionals, but also the customers, the citizens that have to use these services. The languages that we are offering are Catalan Spanish, Catalan English, French, and German. They are the first language pairs of languages that were developed, and we are using the technology of Lucy software, so not a statistic system. And the last two pairs of languages that we have developed are using another system, which is open source, and it has been developed by a university, a spin-off of the University of Alicante. So we have two systems, but they are both integrated in the same service, so citizens don't see the difference between them. The type of vocabulary that we have been introducing is general, technical, and above all health, because it's where we use it the most. And we are incorporating new terminology, specific terminology, nouns of nouns, place names, etc. This service is offered through two different channels. One of them is the internal portal, which is the intranet of the Generalitat, and they can use to translate short texts, websites, and online translations. But as we have done an important investment to develop these pairs of languages, we decided to offer the service to the citizens so that everybody acceding to the Generalitat portal could use this translator. That's the image of the portal, right? That they enter. They can choose the language, they introduce the website, the web page, or the text, and they translate. Here's an example, a page translated into German. And there's another thing that we can offer is that everyone that wants to install the translator in their own web page, they can incorporate a button of translation, you see, in any web page, and then they can accede to the engine of translation and have the page translated. That's to promote the fact that a great amount of web pages are only produced in Catalan, and if they want to offer this information to readers from other languages, they can use the machine translation. We are confident that this is not there are not good translations. They are not perfect translations, but they are useful enough to understand what's the content of all these pages. In the case of the intranet service, we work especially with Catalan, and I don't know why. Here are the figures. As you can see, the Catalan-Spanish pair of languages is the most used. The reason is, the first I told you, is because there are a lot of departments which have to work in both languages. So even the documents are produced in Catalan because it's the usual language at the administration. They have to be translated into Spanish because the official journals have to be published in both languages, and many other documents. So we have been using the machine translation for two main objectives: to promote the use of Catalan and to translate real documents. So what we would like is that there are many companies who provide the services, because we don't produce them, we just buy them. So we have a very small market, and we would be interested in having more providers. There are a lot of universities which are working also in developing machine translation systems, and we are very happy that companies like Google or Yahoo or even Microsoft has introduced Catalan in their free services. and I hope that it will go on. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Monica. You've talked about the strategy and needs at a Catalonian level. I'd like to take it now up to the needs at a European level. So, come on.
Okay, I don't have a presentation, but I feel some pressure that there are some people expecting me to say something about the topic of this this panel discussion, something nice, something wise. I'm not sure if I can deliver. But let me start by stating, saying something that we too often take things for granted. When I think back to the last year's event in Berlin, this tone, atmosphere, here is much more optimistic, much more promising for many reasons. It is not just an accident or a natural consequence of events. For example, that Euromatrix has progressed to Euromatrix Plus. There is much more behind that than just adding the plus at the end of the name. Last time in Berlin, it was still Euromatrix. Now it's a new project, but in order for that to happen and to secure this continuation and the funding for the future, the project had to be selected. And in the between these two meetings, there was the evaluation where Euromatrix Plus was selected, and that was a remarkable achievement from Euromatrix team, because the project had to compete against 150 proposals about flying robots, which are able to take decisions on their own. You can imagine that the evaluation environment was very challenging, but Euromatrix Plus made it through the evaluation, thanks to the good proposal and thanks to the goodwill of the evaluators. Another thing is that when I was introducing the team in Berlin last year, all I could give was some plans and vague promises. Now we have our own sandbox. We don't have to be together with the flying robots anymore. We have our own sandbox of 40 million euro. A modest start, but at least we are on our own and we are autonomous. And at this point, I want to reveal to you as well, if it has not become obvious, the instrumental role of our director, Horst Forster, who spoke yesterday, who is not here anymore. But he has been very supportive for the creation, for the recreation of this field. After what he said, he used a nice expression, after a self-induced pause or something like that, very ambiguous expression, but I kind of liked it, so that he was instrumental in putting an end to this pause. And he really believed that what we told him about language technology, he believed us, and he helped us to make it happen. I may disappoint some of you if I say that we don't actually intend to increase the market for language technology, whether it's 100 million euros or what. We don't think that's not the intention. We see language technology as an enabler to multiply markets, to reach new customers, and that will generate the income. Nobody wants to buy language technology or machine translation products. They want more business. People want access to information. That's what they really want. So what do we need to do on the European level? I think it's very simple things, so simple that they too often they go unnoticed. It's partnerships. For the first thing, pooling resources across languages, across countries, continents. So Europe together with the US, with Japan, with Africa, or another sort of partnership, maybe you can think of Google and the rest of the world. How about that? Another branch or dimension of partnership is building bridges between research and industry. Industry here meaning more and more of the service sector. And as we have noticed in this meeting, very clearly partnership not only between research and industry but also to administrations. And administrations are a huge potential user of language technology, as we have seen from these presentations today from the European Patent Office and DGT, that this is where a large amount of business is and volumes are and needs for accessing information. So we need to build partnerships. It doesn't happen by itself. Finally, we have to build bridges between scientific disciplines, and this is difficult. Machine learning has been mentioned here many times. What is machine learning? I mean, this is already something where you could end up go into a long discussion and come to different conclusions. My experience of language learning community is that many of them do not really know about language technology or haven't done language technology. So there is some work build bridges between these two scientific disciplines or communities. We have to create capacities in Europe. As Horst Forster said yesterday, it basically means, what does it mean? It means people, brains, skills. For us, research bureaucrats, it means the capacity to absorb the funding that we offer. So it's very important. If we offer something in the work program and 40 million euros funding for it, we need good proposals to consume that. Otherwise, we are dead. The next year, we will certainly have no budget if we do not have this demand. So it's very important to submit proposals whenever we have these calls. And I remind you that the ICT PSP call is still open for submissions for about 2 weeks. So it's not too late to submit. And finally, of course, data and resources have been mentioned many times. Pooling of resources, language resources, that's a significant capacity as well that we need to build. Okay, these are very noble goals, but unfortunately it's impossible to put these into any work program, such things as building partnerships and capacities. It's just too abstract. We have to put something tangible to the work program, and that's our problem. I like this when Georg Altersmeyer said that European Patent Office you know exactly what you want, but you don't know how to get there. Now, if you want to be sarcastic, for us it seems to be the opposite. That we have plenty of good recipes of what to do, but we don't really know what we want. And in a way, that's more serious. That's more serious. So we are now trying to figure out what we really want, what the Europe needs. Not only in terms of principles, overarching principles, but very practically tangible objectives. We are getting there. So we have, this is all a result of teamwork, and we need lots of different people for that. We have projects that are helping us, like FlareNet project, which has done a remarkable job since the event that was organized in February in Vienna, where I was lecturing about the importance of documentation and publicity and so on. And thanks to Nicoletta and others, now you have seen some tangible results in your handouts for this conference. There's a small leaflet, which is a kind of digest of the main findings, main conclusions of this Vienna workshop. That's good job. That's a very good start. That's exactly the kind of things we need. And we expect the same thing from Euromatrix Plus. Euromatrix Plus, we need your help in defining the future and to bridge the gap until we have these brand new projects starting from the new calls, which will not happen until early next year. So all this negotiation process takes time. Okay, now, of course, people have been curious during the breaks, asking what's going to be in the next work program. Okay, I think I owe you some information, some estimates on that. So we have these two strands of action. We have the research program under FP7. There we are set for this year and next year. It's a biannual program by nature. So in any case, we now have a break until 2010 before anything new is launched. So in fact, actually, 2011, 2012 is the next work program that we will be designing. The input for that work program will be needed, I mean the actual concrete text will be needed towards the end of this year. So starting from September, October, we will have to start drafting. So it's wide open and you can express your favorite subjects. I'm not saying that we don't have any plans, we do have, but I don't even want to mention anything than just to give it too much shape beforehand. The other program, ICT-PSP, is annual. So we are already launching, actually it's already launched, the planning for the next year's work program. What will be in the call, ICT-PSP call next year? It depends also on bureaucratic constraints, like how much budget, how much money is available. We don't know that exactly yet. We have a projection of 15 million. That's a projection, so about the same as this year. What is the subject matter? What will be addressed? Some of you are well informed and know that we might be addressing language resources. But that's possible, but doesn't say much. I mean, in what kind of language resources? In what way? Building them using automatic means of locating and processing and annotating language resources. That is something we need to figure out. Should we address language service providers, the translation industry, or public administrations? Both have pros and cons and are interesting possibilities. We have to have a purpose. We have to have a community to serve. We cannot just say language resources for the sake of language resources. And there are other possibilities, and I hope you contradict me and or you suggest your favorite topics and subjects that should be on the next work program. It is still open and it can be changed if you come up with good arguments. The shopping list is open. So this is the agenda for the planning. We need input for the ICT-PSP work program very soon, actually now. So that's why the director said that we have to act now. That we will have to feed in some text in June, and June is practically now, so that there is not much time to spend. That's all. Thank you for your teamwork. You have been supporting very well this policy planning process, which is sometimes a bit painfully slow, to say the least. But at least the high hopes that we had 1 year ago have, to a great extent, they have materialized. And I would, one last word say about these calls that we have ongoing. It has never been so easy to have access to European funding as it has been now. Success rate will be something like every 1 out of 3 or 1 out of 4 projects will be selected and funded. So come and submit proposals.
Okay.
Even those that will not get lucky this time, if you are stubborn and persistent, you will do it next time. It has been confirmed by experience.
Okay, thank you for that European perspective. Right, and now for our final panelist. You've heard from him already once this morning, but I'd like you to take your global multinational faceted company and, as per the focus down on the European needs, the European strategies, and give us your opinion. Thank you.
Sure. Is this working? Yeah, it is. Okay. So I went over time earlier, so I'm going to try and keep it short. So I guess the question is, will there be winners? And I think from the content owner perspective, yes, it's possible to be a winner when deploying machine translation, as long as the objectives are clear right from the start of the project, right? So it's not only the objectives, but it's also the expectations. Make sure that expectations are realistic. So when we started this project, we knew what we wanted to achieve, which was faster translation turnaround times in order to reduce translation costs. And we can say 3 years later that this is something that we've managed to achieve, right? So reducing translation cost with selected post-editing vendors. And we also managed to achieve translation consistency by making sure that specific work was done on terminology, which is absolutely crucial when machine translation is deployed. And this is something that I will refer to a bit later. So yes, it's possible to achieve short-term wins, but the real question is it possible to make these wins last over time? And this is where I've got a few reservations, because I think that existing systems and systems that are being built do not necessarily take into account final users, right? The expectations of final users, those who have to interact with empty output, are always going to be growing in terms of expectations with regard to quality, right? So even though the initial reaction may be quite positive, yes, this is quite acceptable, and I can post-edit it, users want to see improvements over time, and this is where current systems are failing, and I think this is where we need to pick it up from a research perspective. It was mentioned yesterday, I think it was Franz who mentioned it, that integrating users' feedback into empty engines is crucial. And this is really going to make post-editing much more attractive as a task. So currently we have translators who may be performing this task and find it cumbersome and repetitive. And we really have to address this to make the post-editing task more attractive, to really make them feel that their contribution when they're post-editing content is going to have an impact on the next version of the system. So it's really good to hear about new approaches or new areas of interest in fields such as HCI. So something that has been, I think, neglected in the past few years when looking at language and translation technologies. And I think if we really want to address these challenges, we need to have a common vision. I think it's important. It's not just us content owners expecting empty system developers to provide the miracle solution, because we know that it doesn't exist. But we need to ask them specifically what we want to see in their systems. And empty system developers will be able to go back to researchers and funding agencies to make sure that these requirements are taken into account. So I think this is what we need. We need this common vision, make sure that we all go in the same direction. We just have to accept that machine translation is used on a daily basis these days for post-editing purposes, for providing gisting information, but we have to make sure that the bulk of the people that is interacting with this empty content can see some improvement over time in terms of machine translation quality. So this is what I wanted to say.
Thank you. Our four panelists have covered a lot of ground in their four speeches. Open to the floor. Comments on what they've said and reflections about the winners or what will win at a strategy or needs level. Open to people. Can you just wait for the microphone? Thank you.
Greg, we're always in agreement almost to a 99.9%. But there's one position where we don't agree, and that is analysis to the level that you want it to happen. And the reason for that is it depends on the language pair where you need it or not. And actually, for many languages, you could do well without analysis because they actually have the identical language structure. And I'm referring to languages such as English, Danish, Swedish, Norwegian. And then you need other languages that if you want to get back, that even if you have analysis, you're not getting anywhere. And that is like going from Finnish, or shall we say reverse, going from English into Finnish. For me, analysis is a question of knowing what patterns inside there fit together. And also, for me, the words with their morphology give me more information than the normal syntactic trees. And this holds especially then for complex languages such as Finnish, going from Finnish to other languages, that is. And I always like to quarrel about this issue. That is why I'm putting this forward.
Thank you. Any responses?
Just a short response. We had a German to Russian system, and the trouble in Russian is for verbs you have to decide which aspect to use, progressive or perfective or not. And we had a team in Berlin that did a brilliant job in finding out when to put a certain aspect. It is if you have a direct object, which is definite, and if this happens and this happens and this happens, then you create a perfective aspect. I do not see how you would do that without all this knowledge in a reliable way. Of course, it's true that things are more difficult for some languages than for others. But still, you cannot start generation without knowing what you want to say. I mean, people do that, but systems shouldn't do that.
Okay, further challenges or comments to the panel from what they said on any of the four aspects? Bob.
I hate to pick on Gregor again, but I actually thought most of what he had to say was quite reasonable. I don't agree with every point, but for the most part, I found it a reasonable point of view. The one thing that I would disagree with as a factual matter is that everything can be found in dictionaries. That's certainly not our experience at Microsoft, that we are constantly finding translation pairs from analysis of parallel corpora that are not in any of the dictionaries that we have.
Can I ask, have others found that?
I mean, we did a large effort in collecting dictionaries in our German to English system. We have about 900,000 entries. And if you look at human available dictionaries like Collins or Langenscheidt, I think there are so many terms in them that it really is hard to find something which is not there. Whether it's been used by the MT systems is a different story. And also, if you restrict yourself because you cannot disambiguate, you restrict yourself to one kind of specific translation. But if you were able to disambiguate, you could use the full variance of everything. And the fact that the current systems do not do that is due to the fact that they are not able to disambiguate. I mean, we had a couple of projects where we started to blow up the dictionaries, and this is useless as long as you have 5 or 10 translation options, but you do not know which one to pick. And that's the big improvement if you do phrase table probabilistic based translation, that you have an instrument to say, I pick this one or I pick that one.
Well, I wasn't talking about MT systems. I was talking about dictionaries like Collins and Langenscheidt, that we find a lot of things in parallel corpora that are not in the dictionaries. The words may individually be in the dictionary, but not as translations of each other.
Okay. Monica, did you have to reinvent it or create a new dictionary?
They are incorporated in the machine translator, but we are not doing. I insist. I'm not an expert in developing this system, so I don't know exactly how is it done. But obviously, there exist dictionaries in many areas that are incorporated in the this tool.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Any further questions from the floor? Right, one more there. Thank you.
It's not a question. It's more of a comment. My name is Adriana Rinsche from the Language Technology Center. I would like to address the area of forming partnerships, and I would like to say we have formed a number of very successful partnerships, but there are also some very amazing limitations and unusual, well, I don't know what I'm not sure what the reasons are for these limitations. Let me give you one example. We went to see the Centre de Traduction recently in order to show them our new workflow system for business processes. They were very interested, and in the end they said, oh, I think we will develop our own system, and we have some Microsoft.NET developers to help us with that. As a result, I said, why don't we collaborate? Why don't we form a partnership? Why don't we develop complementary tools or components? And ever since, there is a very big silence. I don't know whether anybody has a comment to this or can give me some reasons why these things work in this way and why a lot of duplication of effort takes place. Exactly the same technology developed in-house in some institutions and not taking advantage of technology that already exists.
There's one answer back there.
Having worked with the European Union for many, many years, actually 10 now. The IT departments inside the European Union, and there's one of them behind me, tend to be sort of defensive towards the language technology that is outside and really rather afraid to find out what is there, and they need to open this up a bit. And this is my only comment.
Thank you for that. Right. I would just like to answer that with one thing. We have a phrase in English called not invented here. How you translate that using any form of rules-based or SNT, I don't really care, but I think that sums up both points. Can I, acknowledging that we're on time now, can I thank the four panelists for their presentations and their comments? And can I thank you all for paying attention to this session? I'll hand you back now to Hans to wrap up the...
Yeah, thank you so much. I think we tried to put maybe too much into this last panel discussion, which you saw, where we're jumping from lexicon questions all the way to the next work program, so from the very future of the universe all the way again to the size of the lexicon and forth and back. But I think it is almost impossible to do, because all of these things, the last 2 days, have created really quite some background, for a very interesting technical discussion that was not finished, that went on kind of in this panel. And at the same time, Kimmo, picking up on what Horst Foster said yesterday, showed kind of at least what the roads that are not built yet and not paved yet, but in which direction they are kind of they may go, and what we still have to do in coming up now with sufficient ideas to justify really all these actions that are possible. Yeah, but if we come up with the right programs, visions, ideas, and so on, and then we really heard very nicely now things that should not be forgotten. Yeah, in this by Monica and by not that we shouldn't forget the languages, not just work always with the same 23 official working languages, but there are languages that are much larger than some of these working languages, and they have already deployed maybe the technology to a larger degree than some of the official working languages. Yeah, and so, and also like very much that Johan pointed really out in which directions the needs that even the large corporations say that there's a they are so far from being satisfied, even if they use that and show to their superiors, like in VW, yeah, they are possible already now to convince their superiors to use our technology, that actually there's much more potential in there if we manage to do more research in this area together. So I was very happy that in that way we got some food for thought before we get food for the stomach. Which is the next item on the schedule. But before we go there, I mean, you have almost deserved it. Now you have to listen to some thanks, and maybe it's the best to thank you, all of you, for coming, having come and contributed so actively to the discussions during the last 2 days. I heard that many of the discussions did not take place here in the panel and on stage or between the audience and the speakers, but during the coffee breaks and in the evenings and in between, I overheard just passing from table to table that many of the discussions that will may lead to new projects actually took place over coffee and so. And I hope that this maybe will continue over lunch. But before now, final thing, we go there. Another thank you to the organizers of this. Now, I wish I knew all of their names, then I would read lots of long list of Czech names now to you and see if I pronounce them right. But fortunately, I don't know even all of the names. So maybe if Jan Hajec is there, he can at least refer to some of them. And before we do this, and before he comes up and maybe thanks some of the people personally, let's already give them some applause before we know who they are.
Okay, actually, Hans, you are wrong. I mean, we are effective. So I have to thank Ondřej Bojar, who was the person who made the most organization work, and then Anna, who is not here, who prepare the administration things and help us to arrange for the food for the stomach thing and so on and so forth. So these are the two main people, and then of course all the other support, which is usual from the university for the events like this. So thank Andrzej and Anna.